Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Police and Fire and Rescue Board's Tuesday 21st of February 2017. Time is 11 o'clock, and just after 11 o'clock. Thanks for everybody for joining us. We have no apologies, as far as I'm led to believe. The order of business is on your agenda. I will just start by going through the minutes of the previous meeting, which is pages 3 to 6. Everybody happy? Good. And moving on to the first of the public reports, item 5.1, Scottish Fire and Rescue Service, and I'll hand over to fire colleagues.
I was trying not to record there, you see. Before I move on to handing over to my colleagues, you'll see I have Tom McGrath with me on this occasion. Tom's taken up the Dean's role in Mid Lothian and East Lothian, whilst Dean is off getting a second hip replacement. Before I pass on to that performance report, just a couple of updates of significance which will be of interest to the board. I spoke previously, and I thank you again for the agreement to move our Scottish Fire and Rescue Service local plan for Mid Lothian forward for completion in December of this year. We continue to work on the local plan, and we continue to look at the LOIP as being the document which, in essence, will kind of lead us to where we should be in terms of our local delivery to the communities of Mid Lothian. I would say that at this point that in terms of the way that we are progressing with our work around that, we are coming up against some minor blockers in terms of our vision of incorporating our local plan actually into the main body of the LOIP. As you'll be aware, the LOIP in Mid Lothian is being morphed, I would suggest, from the single outcome agreement as is, and that work's currently ongoing, and you'll be aware of the single Mid Lothian plan. We had a vision of using that document as our centrepiece and integrating all our local plan priorities within. It's looking very, very difficult to do that. I've had quite a lot of work ongoing around about how the Community Empowerment Act sits with the Police and Fire Reform Act and what the legislation says and how they speak to each other. And there are areas that we have considered, and these would be things like the review periods for both documents, whereas I'm signed up to review my local plan every 3 years as a minimum. As a maximum, the LOIP is in effect a live document and it has not got the same criteria applied to it. We have looked at the legality of including ours in the LOIP, and this can be done. We continue to look at the strategic assessment, local area forums, scrutiny committees, the community planning partnership work, and we evaluate all our work, planned and unplanned. And we're looking to include many of the areas of transformational work that I discuss here on a regular basis, including things like the Living Safely in the Home pilot and other areas of work which we are branching into to assist the communities in Mid Lothian. At the moment, as I've said before, we don't really have a document which allows us to report against that, or indeed to, other than coming here and reporting verbally, allows us to showcase some of this work that we and our partners get through on a daily basis. Since the last meeting, when I obviously discussed the potential for change around about the budget settlement from Scottish Government. We've clearly moved on from that point, and we are now aware of our budget allocation. And we received a flat cash revenue budget, which in itself, as you'll no doubt be aware, provides us with challenges for a number of reasons. We did have a much-needed, significant increase in capital budget, which counterbalances the significant decrease prior to that. That's very much welcomed in terms of some of the discussion we had the last time around about moving forward with operational equipment and some of the assets of the service. I also spoke at the last meeting of our off-station structure review, with a move towards April implementation for looking at the refresh and refocus of our non-frontline, if you want to call it that, resources within the area. And what I concentrated on during this was ensuring that we had the right balance of enforcement and engagement activity in terms of our prevention and protection agenda and our community fire safety work. We feel that the local authority liaison is a key role, and we look to continue that in its current format for the majority of the area, with some additional changes. But one area that I really wanted to concentrate on was ensuring that I was able to bolster the youth engagement work that we're involved in Midlothian. And in doing so, I have added extra resource to that whilst taking away from some of the enforcement activity that we undertake. Alongside that off-station structure review, you may be aware through some media outlets that there is a on-station structure review which has been undertaken, and this has resulted in the change to a single common duty system for all the whole-time firefighters in Scotland. This will be introduced in mid-April, and clearly this affects the Dalkeith fire station. I think it's very positive to standardise a duty pattern across the country, and I think 4 years into a new service, it's about time. And I can assure you that there will be no negative change to the provision of frontline services in Midlothian through that. Effectively, the change in shift system only serves to split the staff up differently within the station, and it enhances and increases our efficiency and our ability to train together as a team, and it provides a further level of consistency around about. In effect, we move from a 4-watch duty system to a 5-watch duty system, retaining the same number of staff in the station. I previously also spoke about our retained duty system recruitment drive, and this has been returned to a locally focused approach, which I welcome greatly. I was relatively vociferous around this to ensure that Midlothian, East Lothian, the Scottish borders were able to recruit from the communities and were able to interface with them at the fire stations locally, rather than going through a portal to a national campaign. So this has returned to the area, and we're already seeing the fruits of that, with Pennycook returning to full strength with one new recruit just being recruited for Pennycook. So that's a little pressy of what's happening in the area. I'm going to hand over to Tom now, but is there any questions on what I've said so far?
Councillor De Vink.
Yeah, thank you very much. I was a bit lost when you referred to Lloyds. I wasn't sure what you meant with that. But I have got a number of questions, so can I run through them as well? You talk about Dalkeith, there will be changes, but what about Pennycook? Will there be any changes there? When you talk about youth engagement, that's wonderful, and I'm very supportive of that. But then at the next time you talk about a recruitment drive, and you suffer from the same policy that the whole of the Scottish Government, local authority, National Health Service and the police has got, which is a no compulsory redundancy. Shouldn't you be recruiting within your own staff rather than recruiting from outwith?
Thank you, Councillor. I'll just take those one at a time if I've noted them down correctly. The LOIP is the Local Outcome Improvement Plan, which is through the Community Empowerment Act, so it's the effectively the new version of the Single Outcome Agreement. It's the document that the Community Planning Partnership would sign up to look at improvements for the communities in Midlothian. In terms of the differences, you talked about the difference between Dalkeith and Pennycook. Dalkeith is our whole-time station in Midlothian, so Dalkeith has whole-time firefighters employed in the primary employment, and Pennycook is a retained station, so our staff at Pennycook are not whole-time firefighters. They work on the retained duty system, and they are called out from either from their primary employment or from their home to respond to fires. So the shift system that I was referring to, the new common duty system for Scotland, applies to the whole-time workforce. Again, when I talked about recruitment, and you mentioned the off-station structure review and our focus on youth engagement, two separate things, in as much as that the recruitment drive was predominantly around about the retained duty system. So we have quite a turnover of staff in the retained system, and we often lose skills like drivers, etc., as people move on from their part-time employment with the fire service. So we're constantly looking to recruit, and I was just pleased to say that we're up to full strength at Pennycook once we recruit, or once that individual who's been recruited starts on the crew. I think there's an answer in terms of compulsory redundancy. In terms of what you've mentioned there, we do actually have dual contract firefighters, so they are whole time, but if they're in a community and are available to run retained as well, we do offer that as an option, which clearly has benefits around about training, because they're carrying out their role twice.
Very. When you first talked about Lloyds, I thought it was Lloyds of London, the insurance organisation. Apologies.
Thanks. Do you want to continue your report if there's no other questions?
Yeah, good morning all. Thanks for allowing me to be here. Essentially, if I can draw your attention to, I think it starts on page 7 of your pack. But essentially, this is for the period of the 1st of October to 31st of December, which is quarter 3 of 2016-17, that period. The report itself, it covers five key priority areas, which is reduction of accidental dwelling fires, reduction in fire casualties and fatalities, reduction of deliberate fire setting, reduction in road traffic collisions, and reduction of unwanted fire alarm signals. If I can take you to page 4 of the report itself from Scottish Fire and Rescue Service, and the performance summary. It's page 4 of the Scottish Fire and Rescue Service report, page 10 in the pack.
Page 10, Councillor Devinck, in your pack. No. So it's the page that starts performance summary.
Page 10,
That's correct, yes. If I can draw your attention to the six key performance indicators, as you will note, four of the six, they have shown a slight increase in the year-to-date figures from April to December, based around comparison to 2015-16. Although it shows an increase, I'll come on to a little bit deeper regards to the individual performances and explain that away. Overall, we've attended 59 additional Fire and Rescue Service attendances. It was 1,033, and that was an increase of 59 compared in the last reporting year. However, the number of special services attended, they've remained at a very similar level over the various previous years. The number of fires and false alarms has shown a slight increase over the past 3 year, year-to-date figures. If I can then move on to the reduction of all accidental dwelling fires section, which is page 7 of
13
of the pack. It's pleasing to note that Scottish Fire and Rescue Service attended one less accidental dwelling fire compared with the same period in 2015-16 quarter three. And that essentially was from 16 in the same period quarter three in 2015-16 down to 15 in quarter three 2016-17. So it's pleasing to note. Compared with the previous reporting period, quarter two, we've attended 5 less accidental dwelling fires, and Midlothian trend continues to be less than national and east service delivery area figures, which is pleasing. The majority of accidental dwelling fires were within single occupancy dwellings. 19% of these, of the 15, involved elderly, i.e. over 65. The main causes were accidental and attributable to cooking, appliance faults and electricity. The majority were minor in nature, either restricted to the item ignited first or confined to the room of origin, so there was very, very little damage and they may have been out on arrival in the vast majority of cases. The Scottish Fire and Rescue Service, we conducted 260 home fire safety visits during this period, and 106 households were provided with free smoke detection. And crews continue to fully support the post-domestic incident response policy of the Scottish Fire and Rescue Service, and they conduct reactive visits following any incident. Now, although the year-to-date figures identify a 10% higher figure than the previous year, the overall trend line shows a reducing figure in accidental dwelling fires, again pleasing to note. Dalkeith, Bonnyrigg and Pennycook are the areas showing a slight increase in year-to-date figures, and we continue to take action in these areas with regards to our preventative activities. If I can then move on to the reduction of all accidental dwelling fire casualties section, the next section. 15 of your pack. In the section, it's pleasing to note there were no fatalities during this reporting period from accidental dwelling fires. There was only one casualty from an accidental dwelling fire, which is a reduction of 2 based on the previous 2015-16 year. And compared with quarter 2, the directly previous quarter, there has also been a reduction of 2, which is extremely positive. Midlothian is relatively in line with the Scottish Fire and Rescue Service. Indeed, it's slightly below the Scottish Fire and Rescue Service national and east average. And the trend figures continue to identify Midlothian having low numbers of casualties, which is pleasing and positive. The one casualty that we did have in Midlothian, there was the presence of smoke detectors, which gave an early indication of fire and allowed the occupant to exit safely, but was treated by the Scottish Ambulance Service on scene. We continue to work with Midlothian partner agencies in targeting the most vulnerable and at risk, and we have an ongoing, as you'll be aware, an ongoing initiative with the lone occupancies targeting elderly persons and people living alone. That's an ongoing action that we have. If we can move on to deliberate secondary fires, the next section, 17. Page 17 of your pack. There were 93 deliberate fires, but 75, we'll concentrate on the 75 of these, 81% were secondary in nature. And they involved, the majority were involving refuse bins, including wheelie bins and waste and scrubland. There were 4 deliberate vehicle fires within Midlothian, and the wards suffering these were, in the majority of deliberate secondary fires, were Dalkeith, Midlothian East, West and South. Scottish Fire and Rescue Service locally, we continue to work with partner agencies through the Task and Coordinating Group, which meets on a weekly basis, and we have various prevention activities ongoing. Mr. Farris has actually he had mentioned previously about the bolstering of youth engagement activities, and this sits in quite nicely with that. We'll continue with our increased youth engagement activities, as we see this is linked to antisocial behaviour issues, and we'll continue to work with the police, etc., regarding that. If I can then move on to reduction of special service road traffic collisions, which is page 19 of the pack. The Scottish Fire and Rescue Service, we attended 8 road traffic collisions, which is an increase of 1 from the quarter 3 2015-16 period. But Midlothian continues to be below the national and east averages. The figure itself, the 8, is a reduction on quarter 1 and 2 of this year, identifying a continued positive trend. So there's a decrease there. We'll continue to work locally, again, with including East Lothian, with tomorrow's driver event once a year at the Brunton Hall. Not within this reporting period, but just for your information, we have just completed our Biker Down initiative at BMW Motorrad, which went down extremely well. It's been reported on Twitter, an extremely successful initiative termed Biker Down, which we were able to give some CPR education. Went down very well with the local bike drivers. I also have a meeting that's planned with Midlothian heads of the high schools to increase our educational activities within the high schools regarding road traffic collisions and safe driving. That's still ongoing. If we can then move on to special service casualties, page 21 of your pack. Scottish Fire and Rescue Service, we attended a total of 9 fatal stroke non-fatal casualties. And of the 9, 3 of those were fatalities, and these were 3 incidents. But I must stress that 2 of these fatalities were medical emergencies behind the wheel and not, as I would say, attributable to road conditions, education, etc. There was one which was on the Edinburgh City bypass between Sheriff Hall and Oak Creek Hall was a fatality that was attributable to the road traffic collision itself, but the other 2 were medical emergencies behind the wheel. This is an increase in the 3 fatalities in comparison to the same period last year, but a decrease of 2 from quarter 2 directly previous in the 2016-17 period. There were 4 road traffic collision non-fatal casualties that were attended to during the reporting period, which is a reduction of 3 in comparison to the same period last year, and a decrease of 4 from quarter 2 this year, which is extremely pleasing to note. We did attend 1 fatality in Midlothian due to suicide, and this, we would term this as a special service call, but not road traffic collision related. But unfortunately, that was a suicide, resulting in 1 fatality. And there was 1 non-fatal casualty that involved affecting entry only for the Scottish Ambulance Service. The overall figures for special service casualties indicate a reduction of 3 compared with the previous year, which is pleasing to note. And we still maintain our position in the per 10,000 head of population, where we're below the Scottish and East averages, which is pleasing. With regards to the actions around this, the SFRS in Midlothian, we continue to work in partnership with the Midlothian Rapid Response Team, Merit for Care for People Who Fall in the Home, either Falls Team. We'll also continue to respond to the community needs in terms of other non-fire emergencies, with the overall objective of reducing casualty and fatality rates within Midlothian. We're also committed to the Scottish Government strategy with regards to CPR education. We're fully signed up to that, and that continues, i.e. with the Biker Down and any other community safety initiatives. We will introduce CPR education where this is possible to do that. And this is just really to increase survivability rates due to out-of-hospital cardiac arrest. And the last section, if we can take you to the reduction of false alarms, UFAS, page 23 of your pack. We attended, in the quarter three reporting period, we attended 89 unwanted fire alarm signals during the reporting period. This is an increase of 10 from the same period in 2015-16. But in comparison to quarter two, directly before this, it's pleasing to note a slight decrease of 10 in mobilisations to these unwanted incidents. The Midlothian trend line is significantly below, continues to be significantly below that of Scotland in the East area, which is pleasing. But in line with the rest of Scotland, UFAS, there's an unwanted increase, and it's its highest half-year figure in the last 5 years for Scotland. The reasons, if I can take you, if this is possible, over to my colleague, Steve Gourley, who will then go on to, if you see the Appendix 1 of this report within your packs, that will take you to the prevention and protection activities. I think it's probably a wise time to do that. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Absolutely.
Yep. Thanks, Steve.
Before we go on to that, I noticed the statistics at the bottom of each page that you covered only covers four wards. Is that just a problem with it cropping?
Yes, it would appear so. That's a good point. There was an issue with formatting. There was an issue with formatting of the document. So what I'll do is, after this, I can certainly provide another copy of that. I do apologise about that. Yes.
As far as I'm concerned, as long as it's rectified for future reports, that would be fine for me.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Chair. Morning, all. I'm going to briefly take you through the section for Appendix 1 on prevention and protection, starting on page 25 of your pack. In terms of our enforcement officer, bear in mind we only have one in Midlothian, and that will, David referred to earlier, we are reducing our enforcement establishment in the area, but that will have no impact in Midlothian. It's safe to say that, albeit the output expected is below the 12 audits a month, which is the target, given in the last quarter two hospitals and nine care homes and also 11 schools. And now some of these premises are fairly large, and the audits for compliance under our legislation do tend to take more time. Tom made reference to the increase in unwanted fire alarm signals. The work we're doing within the schools is based around that, and we'll be broadening that out to include probably most council premises to make sure that our close partners in the area are able to maintain compliance with the legislation at the same time as assisting us in reducing our unwanted fire alarm signals. So that's an ongoing piece of work, but that's why the schools themselves are not high-risk premises. When a fire alarm goes off in a school, everyone's out, and that's fine from a life risk perspective, but we do tend to find that schools are higher offenders for a number of reasons, and hence the reason that we are focusing on those just now. On page 26 of your pack, again, in terms of the points associated with the home fire safety visit programme, we're below what is expected, even though from quarter one to quarter three, we've had a 26% increase in the output. And all that that's telling me is really that we're still struggling to find the most at risk in the area. So if you were to move on to page 28, in fact it's beyond that, the work that we're doing in terms of our partnership working with both Police Scotland, the Council Community Contact Team, is around providing training to allow their partners to refer higher risk people directly into our system. So that's a piece of work that's been ongoing throughout the last couple of quarters, but specifically in quarter three. On page 28, we've covered a little bit around youth engagement. The Phoenix programme, which continues to run on a Thursday, as well as the delivery of cool-down crew week-long programmes in Midlothian, we are sustaining that with no additional funding coming into that, and as David alluded to earlier, we are putting additional resource into that to make sure that we can continue with some of that work and indeed expand the youth engagement work that we're doing within the area. Our bonfire safety work, along with, again, with colleagues in Police Scotland, an awful lot of engagement with the schools, as you would imagine, at that time of year. And the poster campaign generated quite a lot of interest from a number of the primary schools, and thanks to the Chair for attending some of the presentations for the winners of those competitions. And again, it's around making sure that our young people are aware of some of the risks around not necessarily just bonfires, but the fireworks safety message as well. In terms of the partnership developments, on which are again at the foot of page 28, for me, the importance of our partners being able to direct our resources along with ourselves to those most at risk is the piece of work that we are going to continue to focus on over the coming months. How we use our resource has to be more targeted, and the whole of our national home fire safety visit programme is undergoing quite a substantial review at the minute, which I'm personally involved in, to make sure that we can capture what we're doing in some of the local areas. So our Living Safely in the Home pilot in Midlothian is part of that, and how we develop that moving forward. And as I say, the last part, the Living Safely in the Home pilot, will be reviewed come the end of this month with an evaluation, which is, and with 38 referrals coming from ourselves into council services, means that it's working both ways. And that's me just now, unless there's any questions.
Any questions or comments for fire colleagues? Yep.
Just a couple of questions. First one was in, I've asked before about the home safety visits in the Penicuik area. Given the size of the population in relation to Midlothian, it looks like it's about 14% of the visits have taken place in the Penicuik area. Penicuik's just under a quarter of the population of Midlothian, so it does seem a wee bit low. Just wondering if you could maybe cover that and the reasons for it. Councillor Devine raised earlier about the number of staff at Penicuik. Well, we did have 6 full-time officers there, which I've said before, obviously they've gone. And as now that was actually supplemented by the 6 or the retained staff, which are now up to speed, which I'm pleased to hear about. So just wondering if you can maybe answer a point on that. And just the road safety for young drivers at Glencore's Barracks, I mean, just an idea of the turnout. I mean, it's a good idea. I did hear about it before, but just wondering what kind of numbers you had and if you're maybe planning to do it again.
Thank you. Yeah, just in terms of the breakdown, the table on page 27 is a new addition to the report and gives us that breakdown of the area. I understand why you would be keen to have a proportion in line with the proportion of the community and the percentage for Penicuik, but I think what I've been trying to impress since I started a year ago in post is that we need to send resources to the areas that we need the resources, and we need to send resources to the vulnerable people in our communities. I think that in terms of the numbers of visits, I can assure you that both our retained colleagues from Penicuik and our whole-time colleagues from Dalkeith, it's not unusual for them to attend a home fire safety visit in the Penicuik area, but I'll maintain my stance around about ensuring that we get the resource to the right place at the right time and ensure that the vulnerable people, particularly single occupancy and elderly, are catered for. I think the return delivered 47 visits in Penicuik, given that we understand the staffing arrangements in that area. I think that's actually a good number quantity-wise, but I'm trying to move away from that approach. I'll pass you on to Tam for the other one.
Thanks, David. In respect, Councillor, to your question regarding the RTC, the Young Drivers event, what I can confirm is it was an extremely successful event, and this is down to the really, really good work carried out by our local crews and also by the Ministry of Defence and the police, etc., who were also in attendance. It was a joint partnership approach looking at the young drivers, particularly within two Scots who are at risk, but also indeed, you know, it was open for, you know, for members of the public. And in respect of the future, as this was a partnership approach, we had done this previously, and it would be certainly my intention to continue with that partnership approach so that we could repeat that and indeed make it more successful in the coming years. Again, this is down to the location on offer. You know, we're aware of the situation with the barracks over the long term, but certainly in the shorter term, we would be looking to continue our good work within the local community, certainly in that location, and indeed anywhere else.
Chair, the numbers obviously within the barracks would be obvious for them to deal with. But what was the kind of numbers from outside there? Because I mean, there is an issue. Boy racers, if you want. I mean, it's a kind of terminology that's well used. But I think the safety aspect for them as well is, if you've not got the figures on you, I mean, you're quite happy to get them at a later stage. You can send them to me.
Yeah, certainly. The numbers to hand, we certainly don't have. I don't have them to hand. But I mean, it was certainly, you know, from the reports, there was quite an extensive sort of range of the local community going there. Certainly, if you get these numbers, where they did CPR education, we'd certainly have numbers for that, which is quite positive in carrying out education with regards to CPR and out-of-hospital cardiac arrest. Certainly, I don't have that at present.
Councillor Devinck, and then Councillor...
Right. A lot of material to get through. Very interesting. Just one of the things that I noticed, that wonderful organ called the Advertiser reported recently something about Chinese lanterns and causing more havoc in spite of us trying to do something about it. It's not reported into your, it's not in your report. If you know what a Chinese lantern is, it's something goes up in the air because of a candle, and then when it comes down, it can cause havoc.
I'll provide some information around that. This is the question that's come up on a number of occasions and what our viewpoint is. The Scottish Fire and Rescue Service doesn't have an official stance on this at present, but safe to say the Chief Fire Officers Association for the UK does, and that's obviously any uncontrolled ignition source that's floating through the air presents a risk, and that's something that we would always suggest you do not use at all. And that's probably not the official SFRS picture, but that's something that we would support locally in terms of my role as a prevention protection manager. It's not something that we would ever condone, and I know East Lothian Council have just formalised a local bylaw to ban their use in public spaces, I think.
This, may I respond? This council accepted a motion produced by me that we would do exactly the same as East Lothian, that we would forbid it. I don't know what has happened. I know that Councillor Montgomery also had a motion at the same time, and we wove the two motions together. But I had hoped that you would have been aware that we had made that decision and that should be implemented, you know, that we do not want any Chinese lanterns, and there should then be a bylaw or whatever the structure is. I'm not familiar with it. But I'm a bit taken aback that when we have made a decision in this council, that is not communicated down to both the police, are you aware of it, and the fire brigade, who clearly were not aware of it.
Councillor Muirhead.
Right, okay. It's a separate issue. On page 17, when we talk about the... I wasn't sure if you were going to get an answer or no, Councillor Storm.
It would be nice if I got an answer.
Sorry, it would be nice if you could address the chair as well, Councillor. As far as I'm concerned...
I was trying to address you, but you gave to Councillor Muirhead and ignored me.
Councillor DeVitt, as far as I'm concerned, if I recall that meeting correctly, was it the motion related to the use of Chinese lanterns on council land? But I'm happy to send that motion over to fire and police colleagues and to make sure that they're fully aware of it, if that's the action required, which sounded to me like it was. I'm happy to do that.
Sorry, may I come back, Chair?
Carry on.
If this council makes a motion and accepts that, which was the case, then I would have expected officials to have passed that information on to both the fire service and the police. And I'm a bit surprised that that wasn't the case. And I think that needs to be investigated, and maybe you could address it. Thank you.
To clarify, it was my understanding that this was perhaps something to send over to Democratic Services and not for the police or fire services to answer that question, but I will take your point on board and we'll make sure that that's minuted and actioned. Councillor Muirhead.
Chair, just on that, it was actually a council motion that didn't go through the police and fire, so it would really have been the council, whatever shape or form you want to classify that as, it should have passed it on to the police and the fire. So.
Right. Yep. On page 17, deliberate secondary fires. Councillor Baxter raised the issue that the information being missing off the bottom, and I think we came to some agreement there that in future it would be fixed. I'd quite like to see the information if possible, because I'm looking at the overall, you know, increase in the year to date and these deliberate secondary fires. And looking at my own ward, that accounts for 11 of the increase. But the other two wards, east and west, must, you know, one or both of them must have a significant increase as well to make it up to that kind of 235 overall figure. The point I was wanting to make about that was, do we have information to indicate whether that kind of increase or that there's a lot of that kind of activity in Midlothian South, for example. Is it associated at all, do you know, with groups of youth congregating, or is it, you know, a lot of different individuals involved? Because I know that, you know, we tend sometimes to move, we're having problems at the moment in the Midlothian South area with youths congregating and causing problems. And sometimes we move them on. I'm seeing a reduction in the Dalkeith one year on year and an increase in the Midlothian South. And I would have liked to have seen the Mayfield one. That was the kind of area that I'm wondering if it was Midlothian East was the one that has spiked upwards as well. Just confirm if that's my feeling of what it would probably be, but just to confirm if that's the case or no.
Thanks, Councillor. That's a very good point, and again, apologies for this being cropped out of the report. However, what I would say is, I don't have the direct answer with regards to individuals, but what I would say is it's probably a mixture, and looking at it, I think, you know, with deliberate secondary fires, you will have groups congregating. You know, when I say groups, you maybe have two or three. You know, it's not masses of groups of 20 or 30, but you'll have small groups who will be, you know, who will be going around the area or whatever. You know, but I think to put it down to one individual, I think it's a mixture. I think, to be perfectly honest, it's a mixture in these areas. If Kenny's got more information on that,
just hear from Kenny first.
Yeah. In Mayfield, there has been...
Sorry, Councillor Devink.
Sorry.
Just to follow on Councillor Muirhead's question, if we can get a response from Kenny first.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say, and I'll cover a bit of this during my report as well, under antisocial behaviour, and I think you're spot on in terms of displacement. You know, part of the correspondence have alluded to that as well. And I think in any group, and Yeah, we do have some substantial groups in terms of displacement-wise, and there is a propensity for that. We did have one particular issue where an individual in a certain area in Midlothian, which has been addressed, who definitely had a propensity for fire raising. But within that, I think it's in the overall culture of vandalism and opportunistic stuff. But I will touch upon that more during my input into antisocial behaviour.
Thanks, Kent. And just to pick up on Councillor Muirhead's point as well and previous points, I think it would be helpful actually to have the figures recirculated, even if it was only in digital format, which doesn't cost anything. I think it would be helpful, if nothing else. So, John, did you want to add?
Yeah. Sorry.
Councillor Devine.
Oh, gosh. Just to add to Councillor Muirhead's point, it's quite true that particularly in Mayfield, there has been an enormous incident of fire raising in wheelie bins and the like, and the Community Council of Mayfield and East Houses has been very much in touch, Robert Hogg, I think, with either the police or particularly the police, so really to confirm that point. But again, if we had it all in the six groups, then it would be so much easier to evaluate it. Thank you.
Oops, sorry, Councillor Baxter.
Thank you, Chair. There was a report in the national press, I think it was at the weekend, about some quite worrying incidences which I think resulted from a more rationalisation of the call process, which it gave examples of the fire service being called to an incident in Orkney, which was two ferry journeys away from the location. There were other incidents where the service hadn't realised there was a closer fire station to an incident than the one that was actually being called. There was one that was being called, I think it was somewhere, they were called, I think they called a fire engine in the north of Scotland to a road in the borders, I think, but it had a name that was similar to another one. I'm just wondering, have we experienced anything like this, any sort of confusion, or are we quite confident that any incidents which are being responded to are being dealt with as efficiently as possible?
No, is the short answer. I think what the reports which you've seen in the media in the last few weeks have been round about the harmonisation of the control rooms in the north of Scotland, and the new Dundee control room, which covers the whole of that north area. I too have seen many of these reports, many of which are unsubstantiated, and many of which have came from sources out with the Scottish Fire and Rescue Service, and some possibly from within the Scottish Fire and Rescue Service. What I would say is that we went through a similar harmonisation some time ago from our legacy Central Scotland, Fife and Lothian and Borders control rooms, and the Edinburgh Operations Control has been up and running for some considerable time now, and by all accounts is working particularly well.
Thank you. If everybody's happy, we'll move on. I just want to say thanks very much. It is a really overall good, positive report, and particularly good to see all the details about the prevention work. It was really good to get invited to those visits and see how much interaction there's got and how much there is cross-curricular activity as well with schools. It's clear that kids are really getting involved and learning some good lessons. So thank you very much. And moving on to item 5.2, Police Scotland Midlothian Scrutiny Report Quarter 3.
Thank you, Chair. I will do my usual, do sort of general overview and introduction on behalf of, Force Perspective, Police Scotland, my own divisional commander perspective, and then Kenny will deal with all the detail and difficult questions, no doubt, that flows after that. I think it's probably right and proper, given I think this is the last scrutiny board prior to the forthcoming elections, to, formally record my appreciation and thanks to the board for their support and their challenge over the period, certainly in my time here, which is coming up in a year, but to my predecessors as well. So I'm grateful to for the constructive challenge that we've had around the table. It's kept us on our mettle all the way through, so I'm grateful for that. As far as Force Perspective, members will be aware of the ongoing development of the Chief's 2026, as it's called, 10-year strategy vision plan. It's say 10 years in its span, but encompasses a series of 1, 3, and 5 year plans, not least in terms of ensuring that the service, now in its amalgamated form, lives within its means, operates within its existing budget, and delivers the service that communities require of it. The plan itself has been going through various iterations and will be coming out within the next few days, I'm led to believe, for wider public consultation. So that period of consultation will run, I'm led to believe, through sort of through March, April time, to enable that to be further refined. Some of it has already been sort of reported on in press, and some of the content of it, not least the significant headlines, I think, that were circulated around about 80% of police time is not spent dealing with crime. It's 20% of our time is dealt with crime. And that other 80% is about dealing with people who have particular vulnerabilities, who are at risk, who need help, who are in crisis. And I've got some social welfare issues that we end up dealing with. That is something that we've known for years, but it's something that's important, that's out there in the public consciousness and people are aware of. And I know around this table, that has been the subject of discussion for some time about how we deal with those issues, not just on a single agency basis, but on a partnership basis. And we've already heard from colleagues from Fire and Rescue about the partnership work that we do with them to try and deal with some of these social issues. I do think it's a very important statistic for people to be aware of, the level of water activity is involved in, and the complexity of the situations that our officers and staff have to deal with. Flowing from that, and also sitting with Under 2026, is the Chief's desire that we build a sustainable operating model, and a key part of that is our control room structure. And you know, following on from that question to colleagues at Fire and Rescue, we know that there have been issues, particularly with our facility at Bilston, but there's been significant increase in the resourcing there, and the performance of that has improved significantly. I believe that all scrutiny boards have had the opportunity to visit, and it's a standing invitation. I know that the Borders Scrutiny Board were there on a bespoke visit just a couple of weeks ago, and we're very, very supportive of the work that's been going on there and seeing it firsthand working. And if members around the table haven't had that opportunity and would wish to do that, then that's easily facilitated by my colleagues in the C3 division. I would also just highlight that within the Chief's plan, there continues to be an emphasis on localism. DCC Fitzpatrick chaired a meeting fairly recently, I think, again, sort of scrutiny chairs and others, where that was the focus of that conversation, along with colleagues from the Scottish Police Authority, to reinforce that from the Chief's point of view, that localism sits at the heart of all that we do. A big part of that, linking in with what David mentioned from the locality plans and community empowerment, we've been working very closely with David and his team, and along with council representatives, to embed the locality policing plans within the local outcome improvement plans, the LOIPs, not Lloyds, the LOIPs. I hate all these acronyms. It's been recognised by Her Majesty's Inspectorate of Constabulary, because we consulted with them. They said it's best practice if it's embedded, and it's part of that ethos moving forward. I think David alluded to the fact that we've had some difficulties convincing people that, you know, to fully integrate these things rather than having it sort of standalone appendices. But that's something we will continue to work very closely, as I say, along with David and others, just to try and make sure that it's as fully integrated as it possibly can be. From a divisional point of view, we have had a challenging year, there's no doubt about that, in terms of resources and budgets. We've had some savings to meet. We're on track to deliver the savings that are required from a divisional point of view as a contribution towards the forces savings that we need to make. And that's been through very robust and strong management by people like Kenny and his counterparts to make sure that we deliver against that. The festive period was particularly busy and demanding. One or two significant critical incidents which were dealt with extremely professionally, from my point of view, were outstanding pieces of work. But I think more generally I would make the point that the officers and staff who worked through those holiday periods in very long and difficult hours when everyone else was enjoying themselves did a sterling piece of work over that period and obviously spent a lot of times away from their family when they'd much rather have been there. So I think that's something that, again, formally it's important that I, as a commander, would wish to highlight to this board. Also, divisionally, we've instigated what we call Operation Jigsaw, which is a division-wide operation to make sure that we've got the right resources at the right times targeting certain individuals, certain issues, certain areas, certain offending behaviour patterns. We've had some very successful days of action where we've mustered lots of officers and targeted them in a way. And again, that links in with being driven by the local chief inspectors who bid in and drive that to ensure that that activity is going through. It's been supported by some overtime from my contingency that I've been holding. And again, it's been wrongly reported previously in press that there was an overtime ban and all these sorts of things. That's not the case. We use the overtime in a targeted fashion to deliver the outcomes that we are signed up to agree on. We're also forward. We've done the forward planning for the year ahead, 2017. Again, just to reassure members that we're looking sufficiently far ahead. All key events, particular busy times, holiday times, and the resource modelling that goes hand in hand with that is all in place for 2017, and that will obviously kick off for us in the 17-18 year. In terms of performance, as I say, Kenny will cover the fine detail from the local authority area, but from my divisional point of view, we continue to have a significant increase. We've seen a significant increase in violence right across the division, driven largely by serious assaults and the numbers round about that. Some of that is linked to the nighttime economy. Some of it's linked to certain behaviours in the nighttime economy. Plans have all been reviewed by the chief inspectors, and we've actually seen a stabilisation of that picture over recent weeks and months. And we will still probably end the year up in terms of those numbers, but it's a trend that's been noticed in other parts of the country as well. Some of it is to do with recording of some of these types of crimes and how they're investigated. One other significant issue for myself is the housebreakings across the division. This is, we've been sort of victim as well of travelling criminals. We've mentioned it here at this forum on numerous occasions. Travelling criminals from other parts of the country, Edinburgh, Glasgow, so on and so forth. It was subject of some discussion at the East Divisional Commanders meeting yesterday, and we're looking to see how we can supplement what already a lot of work that's been going on in relation to that, supplement that from a national point of view by getting support from the force, by other assets that we can deploy in relation to that. The final thing I would sort of mention as far as the divisional performance issues, the unfortunate number of people who've lost their lives on the roads. The actual fatalities is a bit of a spike, whereas the overall numbers of killed or seriously injured and the minor injuries has actually gone down. So counterintuitively, people have lost their lives even though the injuries accidents have gone down in number. Unfortunately, it seems to be a facet of the crashes themselves, and people have been largely unfortunate that they've succumbed to their injuries as a consequence of the collisions. We have analysed them to death, and we've put in appropriate measures where it was possible to respond to those in terms of enforcement, engagement, engineering, and so on and so forth. The picture has stabilised somewhat from it looked pretty bleak before the sort of Christmas period. We've had a very mild winter so far, January through February, and that has enabled the numbers to stabilise. But then I fundamentally believe that any person who loses their life, it's not about the numbers, it's about the human tragedy of it all. So the numbers are only one part of it for me. It's the human impact beyond that for the families and for the emergency services that have to deal with these things. So we should still be aiming for a zero on that target regardless. I'm happy to probably best if we take questions at the end collectively after Kenny's done his input, Chair. But I'm happy obviously to take questions now if that's what members would desire.
Councillor Devinck.
Yeah, I would actually like to come back on a number of issues that Ivor has raised. First of all, I would very much welcome, before I retire to visit Bilston, the suggestion that you make. I really would like to do that, and maybe others on this board would like to do that as well. So if we could do that before the end of April, that would be fantastic. I've always, ever since a long time ago, the Chief Constable of Lothian and Border Police, Gavin Strang, told me that he was really a social service. It really is quite amazing that when you hear the figures, 20% is crime fighting and 80% is really being a social service. One puts it into perspective. And the new Chief Constable of Scotland, when he met the then Home Secretary, now the Prime Minister, she said to him, "Now, Phil, you go out and catch criminals." And he said, "Sorry, Prime Minister, Home Secretary, that's not my job. That's only 20% of my job," and put her in the picture. The localism is something I feel very strongly about, and I know I've managed to be able to have a discussion with the Chief Constable about it, and I think the more we concentrate on that, really, the better. So I welcome that enormously. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor. Through your self-chair, we'll make the relevant arrangements and offer whatever suitable dates in terms of a visit. So we'll do that through your office.
Yep, absolutely. Any other questions or comments for either? Happy to move on to Kenny's report.
Okay, thanks, Chair. Just one point before I actually go into the report itself, just round about the local plan. We have done quite a lot of work in it, and there's been partners involved in a couple of events that we've had. We're coming quite near the end of our draft local police plan, which will be circulated for consultation. It will look completely different in terms of trying to align it as best we can to the LOIP, using the key thematic themes that's currently contained within that LOIP, and looking where the police can actually make a contribution within there along with their partners. So I'm hopeful certainly within the next couple of weeks or so there will be a draft local police plan that will go out for consultation, and certainly welcome your thoughts on that before we move ahead and finalise it. So moving on to the actual scrutiny report itself, I don't intend to go through this page for page. I really want to focus on one or two key issues, and what has been a challenging, is probably the expression I would use, year to date. Starting off on priority one, which is page 31 of the report, the first priority, tackling substance misuse and reducing the volume of crime aggravated by alcohol. That actually paints a positive picture when you look at the graph down the bottom, the change for last year to date. It's actually gone the right way, and we're now actually better off than we were last year to date, which is a positive picture, I have to say. The one bit when we talk about prevention and looking at working in partnership, we've spent a lot of time this year, dedicated time trying to get pubs and clubs and licensed premises on board with our Best Bar None scheme. We had 5 applications with us. Unfortunately, only one has actually underwent the final test, which is massively disappointing for me. We had, I think, 4 premises last year, which is the highest we have. When I think of our counterparts next door in East Lothian, I think they have 12 premises who have undertaken in this. So that's a real disappointment for me, because we have invested a lot of time and effort. I know Kevin, the Community Safety Unit, have done likewise. So that's maybe something we have to take stock of and look at a different approach for next year, because I'm really keen to try and push this forward. But we need the commitment from licensees and their staff for it. But that said, that's actually moving the right way in terms of crime aggravated by alcohol. If I could move now on to page 33 of 53, priority 2, protecting people, increase the number of adult at risk referrals made to partner agencies. The one thing I would say about this is I'm actually surprised that we're down. When you look at the stat that we've just spoken about with the 80-20% split that we have, and I certainly know on a daily basis the huge demands placed on my staff dealing with adults at risk, I find this slightly surprising, but I do know it's going to be a major feature in our plans as we move forward with our new policing plan. When we look at the demographics, what we can anticipate with people living longer, we can see this being a growing industry, and we need to get on top of this now. So I was slightly surprised with that there, and that's something I'm going to go away and have a wee look at just to see whether we're actually recording things properly or not. I move on now to page 36, which is priority 3, reducing violence. Decrease the number of violent crimes per 10,000 head of population. As the boss alluded to earlier on, this is a challenge for us all. It's not just a challenge in Midlothian, it's a challenge for us all, where we've all seen increases in varying degrees. We have the positive side there, the attempt murders are down, but it's when you look at the stats round about the crimes of serious assaults, where that's the significant jump for 23 to 39. That was up until the end of December. I'm pleased to say that there's certainly been a reduction in that in terms of that increase. However, it's still a substantial increase. I do want to re-emphasise, and the boss made the point round about the recording mechanism. There are quite a number of these in here in previous years which wouldn't have been deemed as being serious assaults, but irrespective, we are recording. We've seen an increase in violence because we've also seen an increase in the number of common assaults. That's minor assaults as well. It's increased slightly as well, which is slightly concerning for us. When we speak about prevention and what we're doing, I'm really keen to start working and start putting a great emphasis on our young people in Midlothian. We tried a completely different way where one of our higher tariff youngsters, where I actually allocated a couple of my officers to do specific one-to-one work with that individual, which was completely off the radar, never been tried before. It had varying degrees of success, but it's not something I'd be remiss of doing again for somebody's high tariff. Probably more important to me is the work around about the Mentors in Violence programme, which some schools have bought into. But I'm really keen that we work with our education colleagues and try and get this expanded out. I think if we can get that and we can get the buy-in from our young people, it will have significant benefits for us longer term. So that's one of your key objectives over the coming year with my youth campus officers, is to try and get that spread throughout the 6 high schools in Midlothian. If I could move on now to priority 4, page 38 of the report of 53. And again, this is the decreased number of people killed or seriously injured in Midlothian's roads. And again, the boss alluded to it, whilst you'll see their fatalities have increased. What I can tell you, and I know that Tam alluded to it earlier on there in the reclassification, I can say that of these 9, 2 just this week have now been reclassified as not being classed as fatal road collisions. One was a suicide and another has been a medical case. So these figures will drop. However, it's still 7, which is an increase in last year. But probably more importantly is the overall picture, as the boss spoke about. The overall picture in terms of serious injured is down, minor injuries are down, which is a good and a healthy picture, I have to say. And I'll link that in with the page 39, round about activity. You'll see an increase in the number of people who have been detected for dangerous driving. And I can also tell you that in terms of other indicators for us, there's also been an increase in the number of people detected for speeding, an increase in the number of people using their mobile phones, not wearing their seatbelts. So there's a lot of proactive enforcement work is going on at the moment, and that's certainly been aided significantly by the deployment of the camera units, the road safety camera vans, who now have 4 sites, and they are very, very active in Midlothian. 2 of them are producing... I suppose there are worrying results in the number of people who are tripping them on a regular basis, and another 2 of the sites who are producing nothing, which I've asked them if do these ones that go there actually take the cap off the lens, because it's quite a,
a hard process to actually get the camera vans in there, and since their deployment there have been two sites who have given us zero returns. So that's something that the Road Safety Camera Partnership are away looking at, but they are very, very active within Midlothian, and I think they are making a significant difference to some of these areas that communities have raised concerns with us in the past. Moving on to page 41 of 53, reducing antisocial behaviour, reduce the number of incidents of antisocial behaviour reported by members of the public. This is one that's becoming an increasing challenge for us, and I know Councillor Muirhead has raised the issue before during the input from my colleagues in the fire service. And when you look at the graph below, we started off pretty good this year, and it's increasingly that bar's going the wrong way for us, and the vast majority of this is being caused by a youth element. We do have a particularly challenging group of youths at the moment within Midlothian that we're spending a lot of time trying to engage, a lot of time trying to address issues and things, but I have to be honest with you, they're very, very challenging and are proving quite problematic. We've had quite major issues within the Yarnick Court, the Woodburn and Dalkeith Town Centre, and we had similar issues being experienced in Borrerig. The group now seems to have been dispersed, and we're now starting to see pockets emerging in Gorebridge. That's over the last couple of weeks, and issues moving into Dander Hall. That becomes really problematic for us in terms of resource deployment as well. Where is best place to actually put resources, because the numbers that we're talking about here need quite a number of resources to address it. But it's one that we're working with our colleagues within Community Learning Development, within the Community Safety Partnership, with colleagues in the Fire Service, in the voluntary sector, and trying to address that. But I've harped on about it, and I'll continue to harp on about it in my column within the Midlothian Advertiser. And I know Councillor Muirhead, you asked the question, are we getting the response that we would anticipate when we take these young people back? Quite frankly, no, we're not. We definitely are not getting that level of social responsibility and care that I would certainly expect some parents, carers, guardians to be doing. Certainly, I don't think it's right that they think it's okay for their 12, 11, 12 and 13-year-olds to be parading about at all times of the day and nights in Midlothian. But unfortunately, we've not got that level of support by this hardcore group, so we're coming to look at other ways to do it, and unfortunately some of that boils down to enforcement. And I think we've had the children's reporter on board, and certainly for the first time I've had been up here, we've had, when we talk about movement and restriction orders, that's tags. We've had four juveniles now tagged in terms of restricting their movement at certain times of the evening. We've had varying degrees of success with that, but it's certainly one, it's a different tool in that toolbox that the reporter is now considering for some of your higher tariff individuals. But my main focus, as long as I'm here, is actually now starting to try and get into those that are just on the cusp of that, if we can actually stop them from falling into that that horrible cycle, which is very, very difficult to break. And that's where I want my youth campus officer to be spending their time and energy, working with colleagues in education and identifying people just as they're starting to come into that radar, and putting in suitable interventions at that point in time, because I genuinely believe we'll have far more success at that level than what we're currently experiencing trying to address our high tariff ones. So it is an issue. I absolutely acknowledge it's an issue for us, and one that's a real focal point for us, and forms part of my plan to tackle overall violence. Antisocial behaviour runs into this. And if I could move on now to page 42, 53, tackling serious and organised crime, increase the number of detections for drugs and drug productions and drug cultivations. Whilst that's shown is off target, I can say that certainly between December and now, as the boss spoke about, we've had a couple of significant hit days, as we call them, enforcement days throughout Midlothian, and probably had the most successful day in terms of enforcement wise just a couple of Wednesdays ago, where we recovered a
quite a substantial number of Class A drugs, but probably more important to that was firearms, a taser was found, a crossbow and a couple of other air rifles and machetes and that. So it was a hugely successful day. And whilst you can look at that and say, well, actually, we don't want in our community, that is in our community, I think what these type of days do send out is actually when they see a high volume of people and it's the rapid entry type stuff, it's quite an impact in the communities and will hopefully provide some reassurance that the intelligence that they're providing us with, we're acting upon. And we do proactive press releases after that, again, to try and tell the community that we are very, very active in addressing that. And I know, certainly having a look at what my stats are today, that we are going to be, this target will be hit by the end of the year. And again, when I look at round about what we're doing in prevention and addressing things with young people, when we look at what are we doing, Operation Sandorn is now in place, and that's any information whatsoever that young people are involved in the sale or supply of drugs, we will turn that around and act upon that within a 24-hour period. That's our commitment to do that. And the other bit round about that is and I think I maybe spoke about it the last time, is trying to encourage the Fearless campaign, the Junior Crime Stoppers, and schools are now buying into that. We've certainly had one that's signed up, and two where we're doing presentations to their senior management team with the hope that in the next couple of months we'll have that rolled out. So that will be three down, three to go. But I'm a great believer in when you have three in, the other three head teachers will start asking questions, why have we not got that in our one? So I'm fairly hopeful that by this time next year, every school will have Fearless in place. The next page 43, 53, increase the amount of cash and net assets seized under the proceeds of crime. You'll see that Midlothian in there, it's a successful picture in there, and we're definitely punching well above our weight this year in terms of assets and stuff that's being seized, which I know the community love. They absolutely love for criminals being hurt in the pocket, and I have to say Midlothian are punching well above their weight in terms of Jai Division in that regard, so that's a good news story. But for every good news story, we then move on to priority 7, reducing house breaking, which is absolutely my biggest challenge. And I see it every meeting I've came to, but it is. We have thrown a huge amount of resource at this, have tried a number of different tactics, and I'll say it again, for every one that we lock up, we seem to have another four or five waiting in the wings that take over. It is a very complex picture, and certainly now being recognised on a national scale, but particularly east of Scotland, just in terms of the complexity of the network that's operating by travelling criminals. But I'm not detracting in putting everything on travelling criminals, because I do know we have a real hardcore element that actually operate within Midlothian themselves. It's a role in the map, serious and organised crime group, and we do have a number of these nominals locked up, but just for every, as I say, every time we do a further operation, there seems to be another two or three individuals who come to the fore. There's a lot of stuff ongoing that I can't speak about in terms of how we're tackling it, for obvious reasons, because that would blow our tactics. But I want to give some reassurance to the board that we're not going to go away with this. And there is a massive amount of my resource and a massive amount of specialist resource is being ploughed into tackling this. It still galls me somewhat that every day I'm coming in to jobs where I find insecurity or a really lax approach by members of the community. Time and time and time again, we reinforce this message via press release, via Twitter, via social media, via our Lockdown Crime in Midlothian campaign. The key message is help us to help yourself. But we're still seeing a lot of stuff where people are very lax, very laissez-faire in their approach to it. So we continue to have work with that. I think even today and tomorrow there's stuff ongoing in Tesco's around about the Lockdown Crime campaign, and we will continue to for that over the next 12 months. But it's a major challenge, folks, and one that we need to keep on that fight. And on that basis, I'm happy to take any questions that any members may have.
Councillor Baxter.
Thank you, Chair. Can you tell me how many police officers operate in Midlothian and how many on an average day will be on duty? I'm thinking of the fact that the Midlothian is growing in population, we're building new houses, and I'd like to see, the further part of my question is, you know, how that trend has developed over the years, because we have got a lot of new houses, and we've also got a lot of young families moving in, so this is feeding into the issues of youth disorder, etc., and I'm just wondering how we're coping with that.
I suppose there's two things. For operational reasons, I wouldn't necessarily quote numbers here in public forum. We'll happily share those numbers directly in terms of that within a private forum. The issue is about making sure that we've got the right resources on at the right time and targeted and tasked in the right way. We are currently, well, there's been a national review of all the resources that are available against the demand. That piece of work continues, as I say, on a force-wide basis. And within the division, we are currently reviewing our operational base levels, our capacity levels around about that, the demand, and where that demand is, the nature of that demand. And then the management part of that is to match through shift working and various others techniques that we've got the right resources at the right place at the right time. That is not an easy thing because any changes to shift patterns or whatever are regulated and so it makes it difficult. The trend, we've had a fairly stable picture in terms of some resources. We have, from a divisional point of view, we've lost some posts as part of the reorganisation and change to uplift in terms of armed policing, command and control, some specialist crime investigations such as the Football Abuse Inquiry and the National Child Abuse Inquiry. And there's also some issues about the backfill that we have to provide for custody division at times. That's the challenge that we have to balance that out. But we have lost in overall numbers to those. The benefit is that we do get the ability to get support from national divisions for deployment of specialist resources and assets that previously we maybe didn't have access to, such as the helicopter, dogs, public order, so on and so forth. But again, that's on a tasking basis. The force is changing its way of operating to a national intelligence model compliant, national tasking, divisional tasking. And then that changes the resourcing around about that too. That's a process which has been kicked off in the last 2 or 3 months, and we as a division are piloting what that looks like divisionally. So I'm sorry, that's a very long and complicated story to tell you that there's work ongoing. And in terms of the hard numbers, that's something that Kenny will happily share with you, as I say, on a confidential basis, because it is operationally sensitive.
Happy to take that on board as an action. I just have two other brief questions, if I might as well, probably to Kenny. And it was, I guess, around the violence aspect. And I just wondered if there was any detail on age profiling. I'm kind of aware, as a mum of a kid who's 13, at least anecdotally, is that there has been an increase in violence which is filmed and shared among students in schools, and that's a particular issue at the moment. So I wondered if there's any correlation there. And obviously, to impress how supportive I'm sure the whole board is the work that you're doing with schools there, because I know how much that is an issue just now. And the other thing I wanted to ask about was about the local plan and whether there would be any detail in there about mental health support for women. And if there's not, would it be an appropriate place for perhaps individual members to input on? So two quite separate things, but any clarity would be appreciated.
Okay, in terms of the first one, I can give you an analytical product in terms of that breakdown with that serious violence, which will give you, it'll give you age profile, it'll also give you gender profile, if that would be helpful for the board. I mean, certainly, the top of my head, it'll be the normal one, the profile. If you're aged between sort of 18 and 25 and you're a male, you've probably got a higher chance of being a victim, and you've also got a higher chance as well of being a perpetrator. That's what that it always seems to tell us, but I will give an absolute breakdown for it. In terms of the violence and the filming and things in school, I mean, I think that's one of the biggest areas of growth we have, suffering about social media. It has got its uses, but my God, it's got a massive impact upon us, not just round about that violence aspect, probably more round about the sexting aspect and the stuff that you get for that, and also the faceless threats and communication levels. It's a huge increase in business for us. But again, that's work that we need to be doing within schools, and we do a lot of stuff round about that, and also round about sexual exploitation, child exploitation, all that online stuff. We're doing a lot of stuff with that with education, and we'll need to continue, because as you know, when we just feel you're on top of it and you're up to speed with it, Apple or somebody else will bring out a new phone or a new product, which will make stuff even easier to do or even harder for us to investigate, I have to say. So we are alive to that. With regards to the second part and round about the local plan, there is stuff in there on mental health, but we have to be careful and be kind of generalised in terms of approach. Either that, we would end up with a plan that's about 300 or 400 pages long. It's probably the detail that goes underneath that, which is probably more importantly around about how we're actually going to achieve. It's very outcome focused, long term, in that prevention base wise. It's probably all the workings behind it that you'll be more interested in. But as part of that consultation process, it'll go out to voluntary sectors and they'll have the opportunity to feedback in any concerns that they have.
Councillor Baxter.
Thank you, Chair. It's more of a comment that you might want to come back on. A few months ago on social media, somebody started saying, oh, watch out, there are speed cameras down at such a place, you know, temporary. And I went in, this is an issue with me, I said, you know, what's the point of having speed cameras if people are going to start alerting people? And I got abuse, as you do. You know, you can just say good morning on Facebook and somebody gives you abuse. But when this happened again a couple of weeks ago, I actually got in touch with the administrators for the Facebook page. It was a resident site. And I said, look, can you consider not allowing people to do this and tell them why? Because, you know, people's lives are in danger by people speeding. And it beggars belief to me that people see this as something which they should alert other people to stop people speeding. If their child was knocked down, I'm sure they'd take a different view. I'm just wondering, is it possible to try and respectfully ask people in social media not to alert other people when they see speeding checks, temporary speeding checks?
It's a good question, and I suppose it's one of these... it's a difficult one in terms of regulation of social media and freedom of speech and so on and so forth, and how that's regulated. In terms of speed cameras, actually their raison d'etre is to slow people down. It's not to catch people, it's not to enforce it. They publicise where they're going to be. It's available through Facebook and Twitter and so on and so forth, with the idea being, well, if you know it's there, then slow down. So it's not necessarily about enforcement. So in a roundabout sort of way, if the word is getting out that the cameras are there and people are actually slowing down, then that's reducing the potential impact of collision happening or whatever. So it's one of these difficult ones. And again, from our point of view, stepping in to try and regulate social media is a very difficult one for us to do. I think for us, it's about engaging with that in a positive way and using those forums and those avenues to get a message out, both in terms of people complying with the speed limits and taking some social responsibility about these things. Like this area is no different from any other, that we've had lots of enforcement round about some of these things because local residents have been up in arms about it. And I know one particular area recently, which I'll not quote, where within the first, I think, couple of hours, they had bagged numerous speeders. Most of them had been the people who had been complaining about the speeding.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's the nature of it. It's not, you know, it's the not in my backyard thing, or I'm not the person who's responsible. And the reality, unfortunately, is quite often the people who are complaining in communities are the people themselves. So Yeah, I think your point's a very well made one. I think it's that growth industry that we are needing to step into is the whole cyber engagement and how we make best use of that, both in terms of the prevention messages that we've spoken about crime and disorder and so on and so forth, but also about road safety and other elements of safety.
So if we can come back on this, something I actually fundamentally disagree with you, that if people who would speed if they didn't know about it are going to slow down, that is great in that one single incident, but that person is then going to speed up when you've gone. And I would much rather they got caught and had a strong message sent to them and made them think about their actions than slowed down for a few days and then as soon as they see the high-vis vests go, they're back up to speeding.
Yeah, and I absolutely take your challenge back. As I say, the raison d'etre for safety camera partnerships and their deployment and cameras in general is to encourage people to slow down. There is no doubt that as a consequence, is at those particular locations, be they fixed locations or variable locations as part of the vans moving around. And there are very strict criteria about why those locations where they can deploy, because there is an accident history, and it is about encouraging those people to slow down. So it is a very short-term fix, and it does not deal with the hardened individual who speeds excessively at other times and other locations. There are other tactics that we have to deploy around about that, and I personally believe that the involvement of officers stopping and reporting individuals for reckless, careless driving and or speeding is the most effective way. Safety camera partnerships are only one part of our approach to that. They have got a limited impact, they have got a limited effect. I recognise that, but as I say, their method of operation is to encourage people at those locations where there is a accident history to slow down at that place at that time. So it achieves that objective. It doesn't achieve the objective of dealing with the persistent, determined speeder. Other tactics have to deal with that, I'm afraid.
Thank you for that. Thank you both for your answers. Councillor Muirhead, followed by Councillor De Vinck, and then.
Thanks, Chair. I have to say that I totally agree with Ian on this one. I remember when you used to advertise on Radio 4 that where all the speed cameras were going to be, and it just left me for exactly the reasons that I can understand both sides of the argument, but I think in this case there's a wrong side and a right side. You know, I think it's a no-brainer. But anyway, numbers. I can understand why. You know, you wouldn't want operationally to go into the numbers situation. But, you know, just in, you know, discussions I've had occasionally with officers, I can understand concerns that are around locally in terms of the number of community officers that are on. And I'll make the point, we'll not go through it again, but, you know, the cutting of the CAT teams, I think, is an issue that's going to come back to haunt us. And when we see how stretched the service can be sometimes in terms of dealing with the antisocial behaviour, dealing with the problems, I think having that resource to have, you know, to take a more proactive, preventative kind of approach as opposed to the reactive side of things is something that we're really going to miss. And listening, Kenny, to your description of the significant success that you've had in terms of raids or whatever discoveries that have taken place, and the kind of arsenal things that are there, there are obviously pretty violent, potentially violent individuals that are operating within our communities. And to be honest, that, you know, they didn't start like that. I think there's a clear path between for some people between antisocial behaviour and gradually getting into that kind of level of activity. I just need to look back in some of the youngsters that I was involved with when I first came on the council in 2003 who were engaged in low-level antisocial behaviour. And while the majority of them went their own ways and got a life, got married, got kids and things like that. There are some of them that progressed along, you know, into the more serious kind of things, and it really does illustrate how the preventative side of things is really important. And the Chair and I have had our disagreements in terms of how we do that, and I think I need to sort of say that I totally agree with the preventative approach, that isn't just about the enforcement, it's about the, you know, proactive work in schools. It is about positive destinations, as Kelly mentioned at one of the council meetings. It is about these things. But also, meanwhile, people are living in their communities in quite difficult situations, and there has to be that other side of it. There has to be this, the kind of enforcement side, or the numbers available in terms of the proactive side, being able to take kids. If you've got a particular problem, as we've had in Gore Bridger the last couple of weekends, with large groups of youngsters, if it's the reactive officers that are involved in turning out to deal with that, you know, they, as has been described to me in the discussions I've had with officers, they'll come out and they'll deal with the immediate issue, you know, and they'll have to move on to do something else. They'll not be involved in taking the youngsters home at that particular time. That's the kind of activity of the community officers. So I think we've really got to have issues in terms of that. But one specific question, you know, you talked about the disappointing reaction of the parents when youngsters are being taken home. There was, I'm talking a good few years ago, in the council, we tried to take the approach, if parents weren't listening, could we hit them in their pocket? In terms of vandalism, you know, and kind of, basically, if it's vandalism to anything that the council's got anything to do with, we would charge the parents in terms of, you know, give them an invoice for the damage that was done. And I'm not quite sure what happened to that. We did try to get that up and running, but, you know, just as another avenue, if the parents know paying attention to the kid, maybe they'll pay attention to the fact that now owe the council a grand for the replacement of the bus shelter that they've set fire to or something like that. Is there still that kind of activity goes on in the council, Kevin?
Certainly, Chair, I can confirm that there was a V-charge policy. It has fallen into abeyance. That's certainly the case in terms of the processes to ensure that happens, largely because in terms of cases that are being progressed on a criminal basis, by the time it comes to court, there is difficulty in having that entered as part of the charge for a compensation order, essentially, is what we were looking for. So there have been practical difficulties with that, which colleagues relative to building services and also with our legal services have looked at, but it isn't something that's currently being practiced because of those legal and commercial difficulties in trying to get that entered into the court. Certainly, in terms of the action that we do have control of, where it's identified again with partners around the table, where there's a council tenancy involved, then we take that action relative to breaches of tenancy. And indeed, other services not represented here have been dealing with some youth activities. And where there hasn't been any success in the escalation, both of a holistic view and also in terms of enforcement one, we have had some youths placed in secure accommodation in recent weeks as a consequence, and some of those are the individuals that the Chief Inspector's referenced to you today.
Thanks very much for that clarification. That's the point I was very interested in as well, because obviously that was long before my time, but if it's something that expressed an interest as a member of the board, I'm happy to take that up as a kind of going away present to the police board, if you like, Councillor Muirhead, and maybe that's something that we can set up in terms for the new administration, make sure that's carried on. Did you want to give some clarity on Councillor Muirhead's points before we move on?
Yeah, I can do, Chair. I suppose we have rehearsed it quite significantly here in this forum about numbers, and I suppose it links to the earlier question about numbers. And just to be absolutely clear from what I think I've reiterated previously is that, and I raised this with DCC Fitzpatrick just a few weeks ago when she was visiting, for absolute clarity, any, and I'll talk in generalities, any funded post that was formerly funded from a local authority basis, when that funding stops, we lose the post. The post and the officer goes. Fundamentally, in this area, if it's MCAT or whatever it is, if there's teams that were funded, those resources will no longer be available. And Kenny's coming on to that report, but those are a proactive, taskable resource. And if that resource is no longer available and taskable, then it's not to say that the issues will not be dealt with, but they will not be dealt with on the proactive, sustainable, problem-solving approach. They will be part of that wider reactive response and will be prioritised within that wider bucket of demand. So I'm not saying it won't be responded to, but that level of capability and capacity, which in essence local authorities paid for and bought, is no longer there. I can't really distill it any more than that. That's the harsh reality of it. And as I say, the force executive said, well, that's the case. The money's no longer there. Those posts are reabsorbed back into, as I mentioned, and I've seen the posts go to armed policing, command and control, specialist crime, the football abuse inquiry. We have lost those posts.
Thanks. Councillor Montgomery, followed by Councillor Wallace, and then it would be good to wrap up and get on to the next.
Thanks, Chair. One of the sort of, to me, one of the most serious crimes that's been going on recently, and probably been in the last year or so, I think there's been about six, to my knowledge, people that I know, have had their houses broken in and their car keys stolen and their cars getting nicked. Audis seem to be the sort of flavour of the day. I know you can't maybe say exactly what you're doing, but the serious aspect of that for me is the fact that people are in their houses when folk are breaking in. I kind of raised this before, because that could lead to something entirely different for your car getting stolen if they were disturbed. And I find that quite frightening. I just thought you'd maybe make some comments on that. But one of the points that's been made to me is that on a number of occasions when they catch the perpetrators, they're back out of jail in about 3 weeks. They're just doing the same again because there's no real deterrent, which I know is no your own, no doubt to yourselves. But it seems to me the crime's no fit in the punishment, or the punishment's no fit in the crime, sorry, for the better way of putting it. That might be an exaggeration for 3 weeks, but it does seem to be that, you know, there's continually, it's the same people that are doing this on a regular basis. They do seem to be kind of known who they are, but, you know, as I say, the deterrent doesn't seem to be all that high. I'll come to the officers when we come to that report, but can I ask, in terms of the local plan that's going out for consultation, what's the kind of timescale for that coming to fruition? Have you got a sort of idea when you would actually implement the local plan, if you want?
Yeah, well, it'll go out for a consultation. We're also really, really mindful that any formal endorsement or the new plan will probably have to get taken place by the new council. I'm aware that you'll move into your purdah in that period of time, so we'll use that period as well as being a consultation period. So hopefully we'll have back your draft, all the comments, and can be embedded within that final plan, so that when your new council is there and your first council, we'll probably be putting a plan forward for formal endorsement.
Councillor Wallace.
I was just on the plans as well. From my point of view, I'll go across the timeline into May, but from my point of view, operationalising that really is from April onwards. So, you know, that's the plan, just so that we've got a continuity of planning around about that. And we've been working closely with David and his team to just make sure that that's coherent, because there'll be some changes perhaps through that process, but we're sort of going through that. As far as the cars, you're absolutely right, and your information's absolutely valid. I think we have a range of tactics which we are deploying around about this, and as I say, it was discussed at the East Divisional Commanders meeting yesterday about how we can actually get more sophisticated around some of that. There's a degree of organisation around about it. There's a degree of recklessness around about it. We absolutely get that, and the intrusion into people's homes to get keys and the risk that poses is absolutely at the forefront of our minds. In terms of the prosecution of that and the court disposals and the timescales around about that, again, we've been informing and trying to encourage the fiscals, who are absolutely on board with this and understand it, to present the cases as strongly as they possibly can when they come to court. So they are on board with all of it. There's a detective superintendent from Edinburgh Division who's now going to take a lead in terms of, again, I mentioned some of the organised crime groups that are involved around some of this. He's taking the lead in pulling that together for the East. And again, that'll be packaged so that in terms of when it does go to court and we do get the success of giving them to the fiscal and then to the court, that it's as fulsome a package as we possibly can so that we avoid that revolving door. So as I say, without getting into the detail of the tactics, which would be operationally sensitive, we're doing absolutely everything we can, and we do know the impact that it has on people having their home violated and their car stolen. We're looking at analysing why is that and why are certain cars and premises and areas being targeted, because that's all part of the profile that we need to look at.
If we can just add one little bit just in there, just for the board as well, if there is any bail conditions or curfew imposed on anybody for it, I can absolutely categorically tell you that they are robustly policed, and people getting chapped up at various times of the night just to make sure they're in their homes.
Thanks. And just before I bring in Councillor Wallace, I should make everybody aware that I know that there is members in the room that do have to, or people, members of the board in the room that do have to be at another meeting at 1 o'clock, which is in 9 minutes. So if we can make everything as brief as possible. Thank you, Councillor Wallace.
Yeah, it's just to go back to the CAT teams and the question of whether we'd have any policing at all if it wasn't for the CAT teams, because if we go to page 50 to 52, there are 26 additional information and incidents of note in there. And the CAT teams are mentioned in 25 of them. Is there going to be a huge explosion of crime in Midlothian because these CAT teams are no longer going to be funded by Midlothian Council? Or will the police still carry out their duties and execute these crimes in their normal fashion? Because they range from different things, from drugs, drug raids, which used to belong to the drug squad, police vehicles, car road traffic stops, looking after the Halloween and Guy Fawkes campaigns. I really didn't see how Police Scotland, who have now 1,000 police officers more than they had in 2012, can possibly be leaving a shot of police officers. And could have an answer to it. Will there be an explosion of crime in Midlothian with the withdrawal of the funding of CAT teams by Midlothian Council?
Thank you, Councillor Wallace. And perhaps that would be a good time to move on to the CAT team reports, perhaps, and points that we could take.
Sorry.
Councillor Devine, keep your microphone off. Can I just ask that if your points are related to the CAT team report, that we bring that up at the appropriate item, please?
You, after Councillor Muirhead, you said I would be the next speaker, but like usual, you have ignored me, and it is very much involving what we have heard earlier. So could I speak?
In that case, I apologise, Councillor Devinck, and carry on.
You mentioned the report that the chief constable is doing, 2020. Midlothian is going to grow in the next 10 years by 25%. And in the next 10 years, there will be four times as many people, 85, as there are today. This is a demographic time bomb. Is that going to be very much taken on board in that report? Secondly, the rural crime is still, as you well know, an enormous concern. Chief Inspector Simpson attended a farmers' meeting. I can tell you that my near neighbour, who was on a daylight at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, had a break-in. As a result of that break-in, he and his wife have now moved out of the area. And this was a very important person that was looking after some 2,000 sheep. A real, real disaster situation. And rural crime is still something that I hope you will be able to address. Thank you.
Thanks, Peter Devine. And I think just in terms of the timescales, can I assume that members have had a chance to read the report and therefore if there's any particular highlights, can it be appreciated? And if not, if we could move on to questions and comments after a brief summary from Kenny. If you want to come and answer that,
quickly answer maybe Councillor Devine's question. The 2026, the part of that work is about the trying to map forward where are the future demands, where are the growth areas, both in terms of population, communities, ageing population, the demographics. That's all part of that analysis and future-proofing that. Rural crime is still seen as a significant issue because it is part and parcel of Scottish life, and there is a National Rural Crime Board which still oversees that. And maybe just back to the earlier question about do we expect there will be an explosion of crime? No, I absolutely don't want to see an explosion of crime, but I can't sit here and give any categoric assurances around about any of that. The report which you've alluded to in the report there, that to me is purely the highlights and the key cliff notes around about the positive activity of the MCAT. There's a huge amount of work that sits underneath that iceberg, and that's purely the tip of it. But for the purposes of time, Chair, I'll maybe pause there.
That's appreciated. Thank you, Kenny.
Yeah, Chair. I mean, I think during the discussion, I think everybody's alluded to, and it's quite apparent that they've read it. I'm quite happy to take any questions that there is. I don't propose to go on through. There's lots of good proactive work that's taking place within this report, but I'm happy to answer any questions anybody has.
Thank you. Any questions or comments on the final report? Councillor Montgomery.
Hi, thank you. Sheila, you mentioned earlier that you were going to be doing some targeted work, and obviously you'd have access to specialist teams or specialist officers coming in. But I mean, in terms of the CAT officers actually leaving, the two CAT squads leaving. I mean, would it not be easier for you to manage an initiative, for the want of a better description, if you're actually direct control of the 14 officers? Than if you had to apply to bring officers in, because you'll know the question answer better than myself, but I mean, you're not guaranteed to get officers if you're going to be doing something, because you'll be competitively bidding with other forces for their areas. And if other councils have lost their CAT officers, they're going to be bidding for specialist teams and extra resources as well. So it's not going to be an easy thing just to get other people to come in. I'm just wondering if you can maybe comment on that.
Thanks. Sorry, can I just take a final point from Councillor Wallace, and then if you could answer them both, that would be helpful.
Yeah, again, to go back to this. It's called Police Scotland. Police, the GI division, can call in any number of policemen it can possibly get for any other part of Scotland. And are they really trying to tell us that if there's a CAT team sitting in a van in, say, Pennycook, and a riot breaks out in Musselburgh, which is East Lothian, the chief constable wouldn't be able to take these 14 policemen away and put them down to Musselburgh? I'm sorry, that's just not going to happen.
In relation to the question about the deployability of resources and bidding, and absolutely that's an issue that we would be part of the national process, and we bid for, particularly around this type of work, it would be the Safer Communities, newly reformed Safer Communities Task Force, and there are other parts of the country that would be bidding for those assets, and they are only available obviously on a rotational basis, and it would be if the needs and the demands in our area are deemed to be greater than our own. And we do bid for that. There is a very complicated process that we go through to do that. Back to my earlier comments, having officers locally at our disposal, at Kenny's disposal, that are available and taskable to deal with the longer-term problem-solving type approach is definitely our approach that we would engender, that we see a good return on. It's the preventative model, it's the engagement model and all the rest of it. The point about the deployability across other things, absolutely that's the case, but that model that was sort of alluded to, it's not as if these officers are sitting in a van waiting to go to calls. That's the reactive model. That's the response policing model. And that's what I'm saying about the calls, perhaps, that the MCAT teams maybe did deal with because they were a dedicated taskable resource. If they're not there, then that goes into a wider bucket of demand, which is prioritised. And if there are more significant calls of threat, risk and harm over and above maybe a quality of life issue, an antisocial behaviour issue, if someone's getting assaulted as opposed to youth hanging about,
then people will go and deal with the assault rather than the antisocial behaviour. It's a facet of policing, it's a facet of deployment, it's a facet of demand management. It doesn't detract from the fact that there are 17,234 officers. It's about prioritisation. And I'll just go back to my point, when you paid for resources, then they were protected and preserved and able to be tasked locally. If that's no longer there, then that becomes part of the wider demand management that we have to go through.
Thank you, that was very helpful. Last comment from Councillor Baxter.
Yeah, it's not on CAT teams, it's just, I'm assuming we've exhausted that one. Just going back to the visit of Bilston, I'm just wondering that given that four of us are going to be very busy over the next few weeks and we'll have possibly a completely new board, that we wait until after the elections and the new board's been set up, but also invite Councillor De Vink and anybody else from the existing board who might want to come along, because I think it would be very useful for new members of this board to be there as well.
I think that's a very wise point, and I think that's a point that I've previously shared with Kenny. And assuming that the last item is closed, there was perhaps an item of other business that I thought that it would be wise to put an action point for any new administration, new councillors, to make sure that they get adequate training on the police and fire board.
That's been looked at in the first hour of the first meeting, which we may has been set aside for basically to show.
Good. And sorry, just to advise, the first hour of the next fire board has been put aside, time allocated for that. But on that note, I'd like to wish all board members, just picking up Ivor's comment earlier, to thank them for their service in the police board. It's quite sad that it's the last one, but I'm going to cherish it because it's the day that Jim Muirhead agreed with me. On one point at least, I'm taking that, Jim, I'm taking that. So with that, I thank you all for today and your ongoing service, and this meeting is now closed. Thank you very much. And sorry, I should say the next meeting is the 30th of May for those who haven't got in their diaries and who might want to presumptively put it in there. Thank you.